Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Graham Norton, good morning.
Good morning to you, Brendan. Hello.
And listen, before we start, can we just get your movements first? You're not gone to West Cork for the summer yet, are you?
No, any minute now I'm off to West Cork for the summer. I've just finished work in the UK and I've got various other bits and bobs going on. But yeah, we'll be there soon.
I presume people are delighting in telling you that you missed the summer. You know that. The weather happened in May and a bit of it last week. So you're probably doomed. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? I've seen the sun before. I'll be fine.
And listen, I believe you're going to New York tomorrow. You've sold the house there.
We did. We sold our house. So we've got to pack that up and then it's off to Ireland.
And now, look, this is Ireland and you and I both know what everybody wants me to ask you now, but I won't put you on the spot. But let's just say, were you happy enough with the price you got? Did you get out of it okay?
Do you know what, Brendan? We were.
Good, right. I'm glad. Yeah. It washed its face, the whole endeavour, in the end. By the way, why did you have a house in New York?
Oh, don't. It's so stupid. It was back when I was doing five nights a week on Channel 4. And the money was just rolling in. And I was a kid. I didn't know what to do with it. And I saw a picture of a house in a magazine. This is so stupid. I'm embarrassed. And I bought it. And so for the last 22, 23 years, I've had this place in New York. And we've had great fun there and great use out of it. But in my head, I sort of thought, oh, you know, New York, good old people fun. I might retire there. But, you know, as time goes on, it's clear that I'm not going to retire, certainly not retire in the way that I thought I would. So we just thought, now's the time. Let's get out.
And you're selling up in London as well. Are you kind of downsizing, moving into a new phase? I think you did say, no, look, this could be the kind of thing people say to when they're selling houses to the Sunday Times or whatever. You were ready for a change. What does that mean?
Well, I am ready for change because, again, this house I've had for over 20 years and it's lovely. It's by the river and you can see Tower Bridge from the garden. And every summer we come back talking about moving. And then there's a few nice days and we sit out and we think, why would we move? And last year I just came back and I looked at Tower Bridge. And I thought, you know what? I've looked at that a lot. I've seen it. Let's look at something else. So, we're on the move.
Yeah. And you gave up a radio show as well last year. And people might think it's not like you to be turning down work either.
I don't know what you mean, Brendan. No, listen, do you know what? I thought I was working too much. I thought I had the work-life balance wrong. Yeah. And it turned out it was just that radio show. I don't want to put you off your weekend radio show, Brendan.
Yeah.
But seriously.
But look,
getting rid of that,
I do nothing else. You see, I only work 4 hours a week. So, yeah, I'm fine. Are you into a quieter life since you got married? It can happen.
Is it quieter? I don't know. It doesn't feel quieter, but maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah. So are you itching to get to West Cork? Do you find that you get an itch at a particular point in the year now at this stage and you want to get down there?
We would normally be there by now, but I was doing a new job up in... See, I... You're right, I don't turn down work. I was doing a new job up in Derbyshire, a part of the world I'd never been to before. Beautiful. And so we would have been there by now. So, it's overdue, our trip to West Cork now.
Okay, so we'll come back to West Cork. What were you doing in Derbyshire?
Oh, it's a new ITV thing called The Neighbourhood. And it's mad. It's the biggest thing I've ever been associated with. It's it's these houses around a lake in Derbyshire and right. Real households move into them and they live there 24/7 being filmed the whole time. And then they also have to play these kind of big epic challenges. And in the end, one of them wins £250,000.
Oh my God. Okay. So this is either really nice, warm, life affirming television or else it's vicious or is it both?
I think it's life-affirming. Like, I think they cast it really well. None of the households are, like, the villain. But equally, it was competitive in a way that I didn't expect it to be from the beginning, because there are only six households. You know, that's still 20 odd people, but you're kind of so close to the prize day one, because there's only six competitors.
Yeah, so you caught out the first, what could have been the first 6 weeks where it's all people throwing shapes, and just got to the bit where they're all fighting for the prize.
Yeah, but yeah. No, they actually, you know what, there was a bit of people turning on other people and stuff like that. But I really liked all the households, and I wasn't expecting to.
Okay, terrific. That sounds fantastic. Look forward to that. So back to West Cork. Is that becoming a bigger part of your life all the time, do you think?
I think it got big. It got big really kind of when I bought my own place there, when I wasn't just going home to the home place. When I got my own place in West Cork, that's when it kind of became big. And that was about, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. And now, you know, we go back as much as we can, because it's a lovely part of the world. And it really is, like, there's this this bit I love when you kind of drive in and, you know, the tires are on the gravel, and then you turn the engine off and you open the car door, and it's like everything just disperses.
Oh, yeah.
And you just feel so kind of weightless, and it's gorgeous.
And so are you more yourself there, or a different kind of self?
I'm a lazier self.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot, but I think I'm more or less the same.
But you do bits and pieces. You have your usual round of obligations in West Cork for the summer, I presume, quizzes and fetes and bake sales, etc.
We do the big the table quiz at the end of July. No tickets available, and then West Cork Literary Festival is also in July, and I'm not always a part of that, but I am a part of it this year. I believe your former colleague Ryan Tuberty is staggering down the road to interview me, so that'll be interesting.
Okay. It's ironic, isn't it? You've become a kind of a classic Protestant gentleman of a certain age, pottering around West Cork at literary festivals and quizzes. Who would have thought?
I know. Who would have thought? I'm that old.
And I believe you swim every day down there as well now. Did you ever think?
No, I do. I swim every day when I'm there. And jellyfish or no. Well, if the jellyfish are too bad, I might take a day off. But I don't know how, and I'm tempting fate, but I haven't been stung yet. But we'll see how I get on this summer.
Yeah, you need to actually get stung, and then you'll be fine. You'll never worry about it again. It's when you haven't been stung. They live in your head then all the time, don't they? Have you got a dry robe?
I've got a dry robe. What I don't have, and we had them in Australia, we were just there, they gave us these sting suits. Have you seen these?
No.
They're like a kind of cross between a diving suit and a burqa. And you put them on and you feel ridiculous, but equally very safe, and nothing can sting you, apparently.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of work. And like, yeah, I can see that in Australia, you know, but if you started rocking that down around sheep's head now, people would be like, oh yeah, we always knew he had notions. And
I think it's about Australian jellyfish. I think Australian jellyfish is a lot worse.
I think you might be right there. Can you swim at the moment? You're recovering from a shoulder operation, are you?
God, Brendan, you know everything.
This is like someone nosy in West Cork calling into you, isn't it, and drilling you for stuff, yeah.
Yeah, back up. Are you the police? I had a shoulder replacement there at the beginning of May, so I'm still kind of doing physio, but I think my physio says breaststroke is God's work. So I'll be doing
it. Yeah, very good. But yeah, listen, people don't realise a shoulder thing can be quite devastating, and it's a long recovery. Do the exercises, for God's sake. There's two types of people, who did them and who didn't. But you know what I found? I had quite a kind of a traumatic shoulder thing. It's the partner really suffers in these situations, isn't it? Did you have a bell to call Jono when you needed help at a particular point?
I did not have a bell.
Yeah, I think the bell pushed it too far in my house. Yes.
actually, it hasn't been that bad. You know, there was a few days in hospital, and then, but they don't let you sit around. You know, you're right after the operation, you're kind of on this pulley system trying to make your arms work and stuff. So it's been pretty good. But the worry is, I think, that you get to a point where you go, that's good enough. That'll do.
Yeah.
And then you stop the exercises. So I must, you're right, I must keep going.
So listen, I just read your latest book, Frankie. I loved it. You'll notice I waited for the paperback, which is out now. And listen, I did love it, but I know you'll take this in the spirit it's offered. I've always enjoyed your books, right? But this was the first time it never crossed my mind the whole way through that I was reading a book by Graham Norton. I was just reading a great book.
Biggest compliment of all. Thank you very much.
Because you seem to hesitate about calling yourself a proper writer, but it feels with this one like you have a kind of a new confidence that you are a writer, have you?
I mean, this is the fifth one. So, you know, it'd be crazy if you didn't have a bit more confidence than you did when you were on book one. But equally, I think, you know, when I talk to writers, actual writers, they are a different breed. You know, I call my writing a credible hobby because it is something I do for fun and I really enjoy doing it. And I love working on the stories and creating the characters and setting the scenes and all of those things. But, you know, I came to this late. You know, I only started writing novels in my 50s. And I think kind of proper writers, they probably started when they were, you know, a lot younger. It was their number one choice. It was the thing that they were driven to do above all else. And I can't pretend that that's the case with me because I've done all these other things. And actually, the kind of offshoot of that is that I've been gifted the opportunity to be published as a novelist. And so, you know, I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
To do it.
You could argue too that it's better to have lived a bit first before you do start writing. I think part of the step up as well, Graham, is that this one feels a bit more, it's a broader kind of a canvas and a wider kind of scope. Tell us a little bit about it and about Frankie's story.
Well, basically, you meet Frankie when she's an old woman and she's living in Wapping in East London in this flat. And she has a fall and she gets a carer. And the carer is a guy called Damien. And he happens to be from the same little bit of West Cork that she was originally from. And that kind of unlocks something in her. And she starts to talk to him, you know, about West Cork, but then follows on with her life. And this old woman, it turns out, has a sort of extraordinary life. Not in herself, but she's kind of been touched by extraordinary events and extraordinary people. And I just think it's, you know, it's kind of the original plot, isn't it? The story of a life. And that's what this book is. And I just think if you talk to anyone, but, you know, older people, a bit what you were saying about, you know, when you write a book, I think when you talk to older people, it doesn't matter who they are, they have had experiences, they've had their hearts broken, they've grieved, they've had joy, you know, all of those things have gone on. So I just think I kind of enjoyed kind of delving into a woman's past and finding out what would make her so extraordinary.
Yeah. And then, of course, you touch on the various things she lived through. I must say you write really movingly about the arrival of AIDS in New York. I'm not quoting it to you, but just for people, there's a description of Frankie becoming her friend Wendell's kind of funeral date. And you write about these funerals at Redden's funeral home or the church on 16th Street. You talk about families looking at other mourners with incomprehension or at worst open hostility. Who had their son been? Were these people responsible for the death of their baby? People brought together in loss and love, but unable to share their grief. It sounds like you might have seen that kind of funeral.
I think, yeah, I mean, I went to a few of those funerals and I think it's always hard, isn't it? Because those sorts of deaths, I think, came as such a shock to families. And young people aren't supposed to die. Young people in big groups are not supposed to be at funerals. You know, I think we've all had that experience of being at a funeral. And, you know, I find it heartbreaking. I remember I went to to one not that long ago, and there were kids there, you know, in their kind of school anoraks and things. And I just thought, God, you shouldn't be at a funeral. And I feel like that's the same with these club kids, you know, people with funny haircuts and, you know, weird piercings and stuff. Your job is to be out there having fun and enjoying your youth, not to be mourning your friends, and not just a one-off, you know, that it was an epidemic. You know, so many people were dying.
Where were you in your life when all this was happening? Like, what are your memories of that time?
I remember I arrived in San Francisco on, actually, you know, happy Pride, everybody. I arrived in San Francisco on the day of Gay Pride back in 83. And there were people, and they had these armbands on that said AIDS with a kind of no parking sign, you know, a red cross on them. And I was thinking, what's that now? And then I remembered I'd read this article in the Cork Examiner about this gay cancer. And I kind of put two and two together. And then I don't remember. There were various benefits, political things going on in San Francisco. But it was only when I came back to London, that's when it was arriving in London. There was this kind of time lag. And of course, London was slightly different because people knew what was coming. They knew what it was. So there wasn't that weird, it must have been horrible, that bit in New York and LA and San Francisco and big cities like that, where they didn't know what was happening. At least in London, they were kind of braced for it in a way. And most of it I spent in London. And, you know, like Frankie, I was working in restaurants. And there's in the service industries, there's always a lot of kind of young gay people. And so it did touch us and affect us.
Yeah, and we meet, so Frankie owns a restaurant at one point. We meet different generations of gay men. And Wendell, who I mentioned there, who was one of the older gay men working there, he says to Frankie at one point, I wasn't going around telling people I was a fruit or a pansy or whatever. It's so easy for little Jeffrey and Brady and the rest of them talking about the young crowd. So despite best intentions, is it hard not to think sometimes like that, to be slightly envious of the younger generations and to think, I wish it was that easy for me?
Well, I think actually it's the other way round.
Really?
In a way. I think there's a kind of, certainly with me and my old friends, we have a kind of a perverse nostalgia for when it was kind of, you know, you'd be knocking on doors and the bouncer be going, you know, it's a gay club, lads.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous because, you know, you want gay bars to have big windows that you can see through. There should be no shame or, you know, darkened things. But there is a kind of odd nostalgia for that, which is stupid. And we know it's stupid. But, you know, and you kind of feel sorry for the kids in a way that they don't get to experience that. But they get to experience all sorts of brilliant other things.
Yeah, yeah. But you still do in the book, you do the textures and the stories of West Cork very well, and the stories behind every door and under every stone. I believe your mother, Rhoda, is a great woman to take a drive with around West Cork for the stories of every nook and cranny, is she?
She's fantastic. Like, there's too many. Like, yeah. That thing, if I go and drive with my mother, we'll be going down a road and, like, that house, oh, they died in Australia and they couldn't get the body back. She survived cancer 3 times. They had an affair in the school, or, you know, just every, and it's too much. You couldn't put it all in a book.
Yeah, yeah,
I have to choose her stories very sparingly.
How is your mom?
She's grand. She's 93. So, you know, when people say, how is she? I go, she's 93.
Yeah.
So, you know, but she's doing okay.
Okay, good, good. Listen, you took a break from the Graham Norton show in March. Claudia Winkleman stood in. And the reason was that you were touring a show, an evening with Graham Norton, down in, I think, Australia and New Zealand. But I saw that for the show, you went through a lot of your back catalogue of TV to get clips and memories and stuff. What was that experience like, facing your broadcasting history?
Well, most of it was unbearable. I used very little of it. I used a little bit from my very first series on Channel 4, So Graham Norton. I used a little clip of Grace Jones, which was kind of the first show where everything kind of clicked.
Okay.
And also, I But what I kind of also love about that show is the only show my dad got to see in the studio. You know, he had Parkinson's, and
really?
When I think back, you know, like the grim determination and effort it must have taken him and indeed my mother to get him from Bandon to Cork Airport to London and into the studio. Yeah, it was just extraordinary. And I was, you know, so I was thrilled they were there, but also thrilled that they were seeing a good show.
What did he make of it all that night?
So Judith Chalmers was the other guest. It was Grace Jones and Judith Chalmers.
Yeah.
And they loved Judith Chalmers. And Judith Chalmers couldn't have been nicer to them, you know, chatting about some holidays in Madeira, that kind of thing. And
perfect. Saga holidays in Madeira, yeah.
They had a lovely, lovely time. And then when she wandered off, I said to my dad, "Oh, would you like to meet Grace Jones?" And he looked across the green room and she's there in this big Philip Tracy headdress, kind of quaffing red wine stuff. And he just looked across the room at her and he went, "No." So I think they did meet her, but they, like it or not, they met her. There's a picture of my mother and Grace Jones somewhere in this house.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Cher was on with you recently, actually, and she was remembering one of your earliest shows. She was a big fan of, was it Carnal Knowledge?
Yeah, Carnal Knowledge was a middle-of-the-night kind of dirty Mr. and Mrs. quiz. And we only had one viewer, but it turned out it was Cher. mad. And she mentions that, and she always mentions Father Ted as well. She knows Father Ted. I mean, she's a proper kind of comedy Anglophile. She knows French and Saunders. She obviously watches a lot of telly.
Excellent. Yeah, sure. What else would she be doing? I think Julia Roberts was on that same week as Cher. You'd been trying to get Julia Roberts for years, hadn't you?
We had. She was always, you know, when people ask you, "Oh, who would you like to have on?" You know, she was one of our kind of great white whale kind of things. And it was only when she finally agreed that we discovered it wasn't that she'd never done our show; she'd never done a British talk show ever. And you know, when you hear something like that, slight alarm bells go off.
Yes.
Is there a reason she's never done a talk show? But she was fantastic. She really, you know, and it's that sort of thing. When you see her interacting with an audience, that's when you realise, oh, actually, you're not just a really good actor. There's something extra here.
Okay, that's full star waters, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Who's the biggest disappointment as a guest? I want to say Robert De Niro.
No. He's never disappointing because, you know, you come forewarned with Robert De Niro. You know, and also, you know what? He's very benign. He's a lovely presence. He sits there and he smiles and he chuckles. He has a nice time. I don't mind him. Who's been a huge disappointment? I mean, you know, the big stars tend not to be. The big stars, you know, big stars tend to be big stars for a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally a comic will let you down where you kind of, you know, high hopes for a comic. And then for whatever reason, because it's a hard show to be a comic on, I think. You know, because they're not, they don't, you know, on a normal talk show, the comic come on and kind of sit in the chair and kind of do their act. Whereas in our show, because they're on with everybody else, they can't really do that. They've got to find ways of weaving their stuff into other conversations.
So and you have to be witty, really, as against a comic.
Yeah. You have to think on your feet a bit because you can't just have material. But yeah, so I am understanding it is a tough gig.
Yeah. Are you friends with any of the kind of superstar guests at this stage?
No.
Good. Yeah.
There's a huge gulf between the chair and the couch.
Yes.
The couch is a different world.
Yeah.
And I'm just their kind of comedy butler. And I'm not complaining.
I love it. The comedy butler. Yeah.
That's why I'm there. I'm just there to kind of, you know, oil the wheels of conversation and that's it. And then, you know, they sit amongst their peers and I'm over there.
Yes, I see. So you really are aware that you are kind of still the help. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't mind that, you know, like I said, I'm not complaining. It's an odd job because, you know, because your name's over the door and you walk out at the beginning and everyone's clapping and, you know, you feel like king of the world.
Yeah.
But the minute you get the guests on, then you are a second-class citizen. You've got to you know, sit there and let them shine.
Yeah, that's interesting. By the way, while you were down under, did you check in on your vineyards? Because I read, and I quote, that last year your Sauvignon Blanc was the fastest growing major wine brand in the UK with, and they could have phrased this differently, but we know what they mean, Brits enjoying a glass every 2 seconds.
I mean, that does seem extraordinary.
Phenomenal. You're the biggest, you're basically the biggest, one of the biggest winemakers in the UK at this stage. Again, we go back to who would have thunk?
I know, who would have thunk it? And I did, and I, listen, I'm embarrassed to say I'd never been to New Zealand before, but this time I did, I went and I met some of the, you know, the growers and I visited the vineyards and we had this very fancy lunch sitting outside in Marlborough. And it was gorgeous, actually. And it's funny, isn't it, you know, I drink my wine all the time, but sitting in Marlborough in the sun, having a glass, just kind of hit differently. It was really gorgeous.
I'd say it all makes sense, yeah. I see Meghan Markle is about to launch a rosé. Any advice for her?
Don't. Yeah. Rosé seems like the entry level wine. I do have a rosé, but yeah.
I think the rosé drinkers are less fussy, aren't they? So, yeah. So listen, are you working on your next book already? It's a kind of a treadmill,
I am,
isn't it?
I'm literally just scratching the surface. I'm not far in, so too early to talk about it, but it's on its way.
Grand, okay. Listen, we're in the season now where, unfortunately, we have to ask everybody, will you be throwing your hat in the ring for the presidency?
I will.
Exclusive headline got. Give us another one. I presume you've put yourself forward for Liveline as well, yes?
Oh yes, I didn't even know Liveline was up for grabs, but I'll have it. Why not?
Yeah, okay. Talk to Graham; it has a nice ring. just to reassure people, you're going nowhere for now. The Graham Norton Show is back in September, right?
It is. It's back in September, and looking forward to it.
And Frankie is out now in paperback, and actually a terrific holiday read. I read it on holidays myself, and it's ideal for that. It's published by Coronet. Graham Norton, as always, thank you so much.
Oh, cheers, Brendan. Take care of yourself.